Cool. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I'm just tired from working and being an adult and living in this world. But I'm good aside from that.
Where are you working right now?
I work for the Mississippi Library Commission.
Wow.
Yeah.
What do you do?
I am a librarian.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
It's nice. It's a pretty cool job. It's nice.
I haven't seen you in 4 years. I checked earlier.
Oh my god. I was wondering how long it is.
Isn't that fucked up?
That's a long time.
I used to see you twice a year.
I was about to say, I think that's the longest it's been since we've seen each other since we've met.
Yeah. It's wrong. I don't like it.
It is wrong. We need to change that soon. Well, I finally started playing music again. I wasn't playing for a couple of years just because I was doing grad school. And I'm trying to. I'm in some bands, and we're gonna hopefully try to tour soon. So maybe I can come your way.
You should. All you motherfuckers are always on tour, and I always say come to New England, and none of you fuckers ever do.
Look, man, talk to Hampton. He tours way more than I do now.
Yeah, well, if Hampton would answer my fucking messages. So I'm calling Hampton out on air, fucking asshole.
Good. I'm going to tell him to listen to this so he knows.
Yeah. I actually don't know if I've really messaged him that much. I'm just being a jerk.
That's fair. He would understand. Yeah.
But he kind of deserves it, too.
Yeah. How have you been?
Yeah. I've been good. I live in Rhode Island currently.
Okay. I thought you moved. I thought I heard through the ether that you moved.
Yeah, through the ether, my Instagram.
Yeah.
I live in Rhode Island, the Ocean State.
Yeah. I know nothing about Rhode Island.
Oh, well, you know, Rhode Island is home of the country's first gas street lamp.
I didn't know. I had no idea.
Did you know that, Mark?
I did not know that.
Yeah, just a little fun fact for you.
That's wild.
Yeah, pretty fucking cool.
I probably couldn't even point to Rhode Island on a map, I'm going to be honest.
But
I could say that for a lot of states. I'm really bad at geography. I'm just going to call myself out right now.
All right. I wanted to talk about, just because I think it's funny, and I don't think Mark knows this story, is the night that I met you and what I tricked you. Well, I kind of feel like I tricked you into doing this.
I don't even know if I remember this, whatever you're about to say, so.
We played a show on what I think might have been your birthday?
Yeah, I think it was.
And you were drunk and said, I want to give myself a tattoo, and I said, you should give yourself a Derive tattoo.
Oh, yeah, that, duh.
Yeah. and you did.
Yeah. Well, Sarah did it for me, actually. Sarah gave me the Derive tattoo.
Oh, well, I thought you maybe you started and then couldn't finish.
That is easily possible, yeah. That's definitely possible. Yeah, I think that was my 21st birthday.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah. Word. Yeah.
How's the tat doing?
It's great. It's still there.
Is it really?
Yeah. I have not cool. covered it up at all. Yeah.
Cool. Word.
Yeah. Number one Derive fan.
Yeah, hell yeah, you are.
Well, I remember one of the later times y'all came, Hampton used that tattoo, and he used a Sharpie to make a flyer on my leg around it for one of the other times y'all played down there. Oh, I remember that, too.
Yeah, I remember that. That was a good time.
It was.
What are you munching on? I got Kit Kats.
I am eating some white cheddar smart food popcorn.
Nice. Mark, do you have any snacks?
I got some Cheez-Its. Oh,
it's a podcast. You got to say what you're doing.
Sorry. I said I've got some Cheez-Its.
Sweet.
But apparently I didn't say it into the microphone.
Yeah, you fucking loser.
Mark, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Clover likes me more than it might appear.
Sure.
From the interaction so far. We just haven't talked in like a week.
Song Sandwich 2024 is a really antagonistic vibe between us.
Mm, That can be exciting for the listeners, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody's always like, this sandwich is on the verge of falling apart. this sandwich needs a fucking toothpick. Anyway, anybody got any good gossip or what?
Yeah.
Zach, you want to spill some fucking tea?
I don't know. I do so little in my life. I don't know much gossip. I'm trying to think if there's any scene gossip I can air here, since who knows if anyone here will hear this. I'll have to think.
We very liberally employ censorship beeps.
Okay, cool, good.
So you can say whatever the fuck you want.
That's good to know. If I think of any good gossip, I'll air it. I'll air it here, yeah, for sure.
It's even funnier if we don't know who you're talking about.
Yeah, you wouldn't. You wouldn't, because I live in Jackson now, so a whole bunch of people that you've...
Oh, sure, yeah.
Didn't y'all play... Y'all played in Jackson before y'all ever played in Hattiesburg, didn't y'all?
Oh, we sure did. Okay. You weren't there. Hampton was there.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, this is a good story that I'm sure you've heard before, but our van... Well, we were playing at the Jackson Rampage, skate park.
Yeah.
I can't believe I remember this.
I can't either.
It's 11 years ago at this point, I'm pretty sure. My brain is so fucking broken. I guess it was July of 2013. And we were playing, it was like a weird like metalcore festival.
That checks out.
That we got added to. And our van broke down like a quarter mile away from the venue. Like the axle snapped. And I like sprinted to the venue and just yelled like, can somebody help us load all our equipment down the street? And Hampton and I don't know, whoever else was there, like,
yeah.
Everybody just like sprinted to the trailer and like helped us, and it was very cool. And then I remember Paul was like he called a mechanic, and he was like, listen, like if they call me during the set, I'm gonna have to leave.
Did they call him during the set?
No, they didn't. We made it. But I do recall that all the metalcore kids hated us. And,
oh yeah.
Then Hampton and the crew, we all had a good time hanging out, and then we ended up staying in a motel like down the street for the next. I think Hampton drove us there, actually.
Okay.
We stayed there for three nights, I think, while we waited for the van to get fixed. Canceled a ton of shows.
I did not realize y'all were stranded there for a couple days.
Yeah, it kind of sucked.
I bet.
Yeah, and then that January we played at the Porn Hall.
Man, God, y'all toured so much.
It's fucked up.
Cheap City still tours just as much too, right?
Not as much as Dreve did.
Okay. Okay.
But I think we have a pretty busy year coming up.
Yeah.
I don't think we're gonna make it to Jackson. I want to.
Well, that's okay. Next, you know, keep it in mind.
Will you book us a show if I can make it work?
Yeah, absolutely. Right,
maybe I'll just reroute this fucking tour. I don't give a
hell
shit.
Yeah. No, I can definitely hook y'all up.
Cool. Word.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Mark, do you have any gossip that you want to share before we start? I mean, we've been recording, but...
I don't think so, no.
Oh, cool. Nice. I don't have any gossip.
No, sorry.
I don't either.
You don't? Yeah.
I work in a library. I really don't do much.
Oh, there. I'm sure, like, one of the other librarians, like, sucks to work with, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, sure. Absolutely.
There you go. Yeah. Man, Zach is talking so much shit about the
Mississippi
I'm really Library Commission.
It out right now.
Jesus Christ. It's like a teen drama.
Yeah, dude. I have to liberally use those bleeps.
Anyway, did you make a sandwich conceptually?
I did. I conceptually made a BLT. With guacamole? Yeah.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah. A BLTG.
Is it on the side or is it like slapped right on top?
No, it's sliced or not sliced. Yeah, it's slathered on there.
Yeah. Can I have sliced. A slice of guacamole?
It's sliced.
Do you make your own guac?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
No, I'm ordering the sandwich from somewhere.
From where?
I don't know. Wherever it has everything to make a BLT and a guac sandwich.
Yeah, not many places know how to make a BLT, so no. It's tough to find one. What song do you want to talk about, Kurt?
We can talk about Like Eating Glass by Block Party first.
We'll be right back. word, dude. What? Okay, so I just had a weird reaction to that. I don't know why.
Okay.
I have to admit, today
I assume
was
that the... you have a big block party take or something.
Yeah. I hope so.
I know. Okay, here's my experience with Block Party. My best friend in high school all the time would show me a picture of him and the singer from Block Party that he took at a show or something, and he'd go, "This is when I met the guy from Block Party," and I'd go, "Cool, I've never listened to that band." And me having never listened to that band remained true until this morning.
Oh my god. Well, that's great. I'm glad I could, finally get you there.
Interesting.
It's weird because they seem like a band that would be kind of in my DNA, I think.
Yeah, I definitely think you would enjoy them.
Yeah, I liked it, so there you go.
Well, great, good, wonderful.
but why do you like them?
Block Party. So when I was getting into music for me was mainly because I had an older brother, and he was like,
"Do you still have an older brother?"
I do. I still have an older brother.
That would have been fucked up if I just made you relive his.
I'm like,
death
well,
or
actually, yeah, that would have been pretty rough, but thankfully not. But he was really into nu metal, so all I listened to when I was really little was nu metal.
Word.
And then
name your favorites.
Mudvayne and Alien Ant Farm and Slipknot, if we're talking about nu metal.
Cool.
But him and all of his friends,
that Alien Ant Farm album is awesome.
I still listen to it pretty regularly. It's really good. But they all went when I was in middle school.
Sick drummer.
Oh yeah, that whole band is so tight. But my brother and his friends, they went to see Mudvayne in New Orleans or something. And when they're in their hotel room, they saw a music video for, I think, the song Banquet off of that first Block Party album, and then they all became obsessed with it. And it was one of the first I was listening to a bunch of nu metal and Green Day and Blink-182, that kind of punk stuff. It's pretty much all I was listening to until this point, from 5 years old to 10 or something. And so they all got obsessed with that first Block Party album, so I started hearing it all the time from them. And I guess it was the first kind of more indie rock leaning kind of band I got into. But something about that album, it's still one of my favorite albums in getting older and getting into actual punk and hardcore stuff, and then getting into the Buzzcocks and then realizing the influence bands the Buzzcocks had on Block Party. I don't know. And that song particularly, I think when I was little, I was really drawn to lyrics in songs, and any emotional lyrics. I think I was really drawn to as a little kid, because I feel like in the family I grew up in, we weren't talking about our feelings much, so seeing that portrayed elsewhere was super exciting. And something about, I don't know, my punk addled brain is so obsessed with just speed in music, and something about just the constant quick tempo of that song and the build up with the bass line, then layered with these of course, when I'm in middle school listening to this song, it obviously I can't relate to it anyway, but the emotion and their vocalist voice has always really caught me. And to this day, it's an album. Usually when if I'm practicing drums or something, I play along to that album all the time. There's just such a fun intensity to it. And then the very angular nature of the guitars and, I don't know. It's just great. Whole album rocks to me.
Yeah, the album is a really, really fun listen. I listened to it twice today.
Yeah,
had a great time. And I didn't realize what's the second song called?
Helicopter. I think that was their big hit.
Yeah. Because when that came out, I was like, oh yeah, I know this song. But I was, I guess I didn't really know what to expect with this band.
Yeah.
Other than that, I knew that they were kind of dance punky.
Mm-hmm.
Weirdly both kind of an aggressive version of dance punk and a very watered down version of dance punk, all at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. It's interesting. I think I was always drawn to them because lyrically it's very emotional and like very, like, especially, I mean, I know we're their second album, if you ever listen to it, I feel like gets even more like, I don't know, a lot of those bands just like reflective on like interpersonal relationships and things that I've always been drawn to in music because like I'm bad at writing about those things. So when other people can write about it in a way that I find relatable to, it's really nice. But the way they can like, I've always just like the weird like juxtaposition of like the music itself is like really fast and like intense, and there's this almost like a mania to it at certain points, and then like the lyrics contradicting it with this kind of like somber reflective tone to it.
Yeah, for sure. Mark, do you like this band, I think?
My Block Party experience is I specifically like this song a lot and then would let the rest of the album play and nothing else would grab me as much as this first song did. And so I'm glad that you picked this one because this is the only Block Party song that I really know or care about. But I think it rules.
Why is it spelled with a C? Oh, I know why it's spelled with a C. Let me fuck off.
Enlighten me. Why is it spelled with a C?
And oh, because it's like the you know, like a political block.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Just for anyone that wasn't following.
Sorry. Well, don't I feel like a big fucking idiot?
You know, it's what's weird. Block Party is a band, like, I would still, like, go see them if I had the chance, but I feel like they got worse with every album.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I don't know, I don't think, that, like, their albums after the first one are bad or anything, but I just feel like it's the classic thing of, like, this band releases this kind of, like, lightning in a bottle album, and then, I don't know, their third album is interesting because it's, like, an electronic dance album. And that's just an interesting, like, I don't know. I like when bands start as one thing and then fuck around and do other weird shit. Even if it doesn't land, I find it interesting to, like, see what they're doing.
Yeah. A thing that you and I talked about once that I think I was more excited about than you is how, so either you or Hampton, are the people who turned me onto Fucked Up.
Really?
Yeah, because we were at...
Holy shit.
We were at your house and somebody had David Comes to Life on vinyl.
Yeah.
And somebody put it on and I was like, oh, that's fucking cool.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, probably... It must have been when Cheap City played in Hattiesburg.
Mm-hmm.
You and I were driving somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And you had Dose Your Dreams in the car?
Yes.
And I was like, this record's amazing. And you were like, I haven't really listened to it. I don't really care about it. and I was like, I love how they took like this huge left turn. And you were like, I don't know.
You know, yeah, that's funny you point that out. I still, with Fucked Up, the only album that has like fully captivated me with that band is David Comes to Life.
Yeah, I think that's true for like, honestly, most people.
Yeah, yeah. I still, you know what? I actually... still listen to Dose Your Dreams. So that album did start to grow on me.
Yeah, fuck yeah, it did.
It's good. It's good. Yeah. Because I listened to it just a couple months ago, actually. It's like every now and then I'll re-listen to Fucked Up, and I'll just listen to David Comes to Life, and that's what it was for years. And now I'll listen to David Comes to Life and then Dose Your Dreams. And then I'm like, okay,
fuck
all
yeah.
Right.
Do you know that we had their drummer on the podcast?
No, I had no idea.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
You're gonna have to. I don't even know their drummer's name, but you're going to have to tell me so I can go...
Jonah Felco.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to go listen to that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
How did you, do you know them, or did you just like, how did that connect happen?
It a weird, like, I met somebody at a show, like about a year ago. We had him, his name's Robbie.
Uh-huh.
Robbie Proudlove. We had him on the podcast, and he knows I'm a big Fucked Up fan because I'm always like posting about their records and shit. And Robbie was like, oh, I'm really good friends with somebody who's in this band called Jade Hairpins, which is a fucked up side project. So we had that guy on. And then he was like, do you want to get Jonah on? So it was a weird.
Cool.
One of those things. But
yeah, yeah.
But yeah, anyhow, I feel like I'm always cool. The person who
was the most like handsome and famous person we've ever had on the podcast.
He is very handsome.
I know I've seen him. I've watched plenty of videos of him. I can't picture him in my mind right now. But I feel like that whole band is just a bunch of attractive adults.
The very all very pretty people. Yeah. Even Damien in his own weirdo way.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I'm always the person who like really loves the Left Turn album.
Mm-hmm.
So
I do sometimes. Block Party had another album called I think it's called Hymns, and it was also a pretty big Left Turn. It's like more the electronic line, but I don't know how to describe it. I'm bad at describing music that's not just punk music. I don't know. Check it out. It's like interesting electronic stuff, and I liked it a lot when it first came out. I haven't listened to it in a while, but I feel like I don't know. I am very, I think, hit or miss with when people take the Left Turn, but no matter what, I think it's interesting. Because I feel like so many of those 80s hardcore bands took the weird Left Turn into just, like, rock music, and I don't like any of that.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Yeah, like, I don't know, like, Flipper or whatever.
Yeah, I think about, like, DYS all the time. That first DYS album is one of my favorites, and that second one's just, like, rock music. Which, yeah. You know, can be fine.
Do you have any thoughts about Wichita, the label?
I don't even know. No, I don't even know what that is.
Oh, it's the label that put out the Silent Alarm.
Okay.
But they also some interesting, like their lineup is really weird because they put out the first Blood Brothers record.
Oh, okay.
And let's see who else. They had the Yeah Yeah Yeahs and La Savvy Fav. So a lot of like dance punk bands.
Yeah.
They like in the early 2000s they were like the dance punk label.
Okay, well that makes sense. All those bands you're a La Savvy Fav fan, aren't you?
I love La Savvy.
Okay, Fav, I thought I think I might have learned about them from you.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Someone or maybe Paul mentioned it to me.
Maybe. Oh, no, I don't know. I think I actually can tell you exactly when I got into La Savvy Fav.
Uh huh.
It actually might have been on the same tour that Cheap City played in Jackson.
Okay.
Because we played in Durham, North Carolina.
Yeah.
Or maybe Raleigh. We were in North Carolina. And after the show, this guy came up to me and he was like, I need to talk to you outside. And I said, okay, what a weird thing. And we went outside and he was like, do you know the band La Savvy Fav? And I said, no. And then I was just like, oh yeah, I'll check them out. Like, thanks for telling me. And he was like, you and their singer have very similar stage presences. And I said, oh my gosh. And then he made me watch a video. And at first I was very annoyed because I was like, I don't want to do this like on the street.
Yeah.
But I was really glad because they have become one of my favorite bands.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, I have had the same thought about you. I swear to God, I learned about it from you or someone in Cheap City. But after I ended up checking them out, I was like, oh my God, yeah, this is exactly what I would expect Clover to be into.
Hell yeah. Word. Mark, do you know La Savvy Fav?
No, not really. I was looking at the Wichita roster and I saw that they did the first two Cribs albums.
Oh, I don't know that band.
Into the Cribs?
I've never heard of them.
Oh, that's like a British, like indie punkish indie band.
Okay.
From the same time as like Block Party.
I feel like I should probably, with how much I like Block Party, I should probably look at what else Wichita has put out, and I'm sure I would find other things I like in there.
Oh yeah, no, they have an insane roster because there's also like Let's see. Los Campesinos, Waxahachie, Best Coast, Bright Eyes, oh, Kate wow. LeBond, The Bronx. Like, it just kind of keeps going.
Yeah, okay.
They did the Dodos for a while. Yeah.
Are you
Wild
a,
Flag?
Are you a yes fan?
Honestly, not really.
Me and Hampton, when y'all first played Hattiesburg, did y'all play with our two-piece band?
Remind me what it was called.
Full Body Japanese.
I think so. I do have an archive, and I'm gonna double check.
Okay. Well, we covered we covered Maps by them. I remembered, but anytime I've tried to listen to other yeah stuff, none of it's like really caught my attention. But I also like haven't spent a ton of time listening to that band. But I keep thinking I'm like I should or something. I don't know.
Yes, the exact day was January 11th, 2014.
Okay.
And shit. there were two bands on this bill. What the fuck is wrong with you freaks? It was you and us.
It's because at that time there weren't other bands in Hattiesburg.
Yeah, and it's crazy because Hattiesburg is now like, you know, DIY punk capital of the world.
Yeah, it's huge now. But yeah, at that time it was us and there was this other band called Ledoux. But I don't know. I swear it was just like us and two other bands that ever played shows back then. And yeah, now it's crazy.
Well, I do remember that show like popped the fuck off.
Yeah. But I think that's like, I don't know. Hattiesburg got so big, but because I just think like it's a perfect town for that. It's like this weird college town right between like New Orleans and Mobile and like, I don't know, it's kind of like close to all these places and you get all these transplants there and then like I remember we only started doing house shows because we like played a show at some bar and then all these people that we were friends with wanted to come hang in our house afterwards and they asked us to play the set again. And so we played the set in our living room at like 11 o'clock and you know, no one called the police and we were like, okay, like well we'll do a house show. And I just remember like y'all were one of the first bands that we booked there, if I remember correctly.
To my memory, it was the first show you had, but I could be wrong.
No, I think we had one or two before y'all. Like, I remember some
rude,
like, some okay, some like metalcore band played, and I just remember like you know they were nice, but we didn't really like get along with them or like become pals with them. But yeah, I all to say, yeah. By the time that show happened, yeah, I feel like kids so quickly were just like flocking to those shows and like anything. Like DIY or just not at the bars that were in town.
Yeah, Hattiesburg has like this kind of perfect storm of elements to create like a really good scene that is like you kind of can't like manufacture. Mm-hmm. Like there's just like just enough people who like want to be really active and like a constant influx of like young people and like not enough like actual venues.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And it's only gotten now. I mean, it just keeps like the music scene there keeps growing and it's really cool. Now there's just like, I don't know, I feel like now there's like three house venues and there's like two or three bars that regularly like let punk bands and stuff book shows there now. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's totally bonkers.
Yeah.
You know what? Okay, I don't know if I've ever talked to you about this. Another show story from Hattiesburg. So I want to say the last time, or maybe the second to last time that Dereve played in Hattiesburg, and I'm pretty sure it was definitely at the Porn Hall.
Okay.
There were like a couple kids at this show who were like just like getting like a little violent during our set.
Mm-hmm.
And like we stopped a couple times. And like told them to like chill.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if you remember that like the next day, like somebody messaged me and was like those kids like broke my arm like during the show.
I forgot about that.
And then like I think I told you or Hampton or something, and my understanding is like those kids were like asked to like not come to shows anymore.
I could believe that. I don't remember who those kids were.
I don't either, but okay. What I will tell you
is
that the next summer we played a show in New Orleans. And after our set, I was just kind of like hanging out outside. And this kid came up to me and was just like, yeah, your band is really cool. The red keyboard reminded me of this band I saw in Mississippi last summer. But like they fucking sucked and they like got me kicked out because like I was moshing too hard, like fucking pussies.
Holy shit. That's awesome. Yeah.
And I was like, sounds like a jerk.
Oh my God. That's so good.
And I, yeah, that's it. We left not long after.
Yeah, that's great. That's, I love it.
Anyhow, so thank you for facilitating me causing more trouble.
Oh yeah, no, anytime. I love it. I feel like that was constantly happening for us early on in Hattiesburg, or just for a couple of years in Hattiesburg. Of like, I feel like kids were always calling us like, you know, like PC punks or whatever, because we'd be like, hey, can y'all not hurt people at shows?
Yeah, you in my house?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Please.
Yeah. Yeah. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, anyhow, I like Block Party now. I think, yeah, I'm a Block Party fan.
Yeah, you should. You should check out their discography.
Okay.
It's overall, I enjoy it, but I do think that first album's kind of their peak.
Have you seen them?
No, I would love to. They toured the States like a year or two ago with Paramore. And I was, yeah, like, man, this would be sick. But the tickets, the closest to me was like New Orleans, and the tickets were like $300 or something. And I was like, nah, no way.
Yeah, I'm sure. I feel like I see Block Party tour announcements. Maybe I'm just making that up, but no, I'm checking.
They recently started, the last couple of years, started touring a good bit again. There's, okay, a couple of years they didn't have like a very steady lineup, I don't think. Because it's only their guitar players are like the original members now, I think.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I see. Maybe I can be on Wichita. Do you think they take demos?
We should send one.
Have you ever had success doing that?
No. The greatest success I've had mailing tapes is like getting Maximum Rock and Roll to write like lukewarm reviews of a tape I mailed them.
Yeah. Yeah, that checks out. Honestly, a lukewarm review for Maximum Rock and Roll is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I felt good about it.
I feel like they have so many reviewers who are just like either very critical or like excited about being mean.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's punk. And punk is critical.
Yeah, because everybody loves reading old Steve Albini reviews.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mark, you got anything else about Block Party?
I just wanted to mention how cool, like, the atmospheric guitar effects kind of stuff happening in this song is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that was what really drew me to it initially.
Yeah.
When I came across this band in like 2007 or whatever.
Mark, see, this is why I think that you should.
A pretty cool drum beat.
Yeah. 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 I love playing that song on drums. It's been one of my favorite like drum lines for forever.
Mark, this is why you should listen to
Les
Savvy. Is
that your instrument of focus, Zach?
I kind of jump around, but right now, the last like 2 years, it's been the main thing I've been playing. Yeah.
Cool. I love playing drums.
I do too. I remember learning recently, and I didn't know this forever, that Clover, you started, like, when you went to school, weren't you doing drums originally?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah,
I feel like you didn't tell me that until the last time we saw each other 4 years ago.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a secret.
Whoops.
No, I was just joking. Yeah, I don't know. I, like, when I was growing, like, drums were my first instrument, and I was like super serious about drums. Like when I went to college, I was like, I'm gonna be like a full time jazz drummer.
Yeah.
And then I just didn't.
Oh my god, I was talking to you a year ago. I was dating this girl who just went to, she's at NEC now in Boston. Yeah. But she played a lot of like avant-garde jazz stuff, and I would I started trying to like learn how to jazz drum. And I don't know if it's like the 8 years of just punk drumming, but it like, dude, it I cannot handle it at all. I keep trying though.
For
I keep
me,
practicing.
It's the left foot.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely agreed.
The left foot that makes it hard, Mark?
Yeah. Yeah, like I can swing fine if it's, if I just have to focus on like the ride and the snare and not getting too crazy with the snare and the kick drum. But if I have to try to, you know, do the two and the four with the hi-hat on top of that, it just all goes to hell.
I'm the exact same way. I can, I can keep the hi-hat going for every beat, but yeah, if it has to just be two and four, I fall apart.
Yeah, I think like when I was like learning drums, like one of my first teachers was like, you should like start with jazz. And I feel like if I was still seriously playing drums now and then like decided to start jazz, I feel like I'd have a much harder time. It's kind of like learning a language when you're young or something.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Zach, do you have thoughts about the website genius.com?
You know, I heard y'all mention this in the last episode when I was listening to it earlier today, doing my prep work. And I used to use it all the time in high school, listening to like hip hop and rap and being like,
yeah,
what are these like rhymes about? But yeah, I'm familiar.
Well, there are some annotations for, this song. And I haven't checked, but I assume that there's annotations for Arc Arsenal, which we'll talk about later.
I looked today, because of y'all doing this in the last episode. Yeah, there are.
And I'm sure they're real fucking funny.
Yeah, I didn't realize how... I haven't looked at this website in years, and I didn't realize how stupid it was.
Oh, it's like... I think a relic of a kind of internet that doesn't really exist anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's kind of why I love it, because it reminds me of, like, being on the internet when in like 2005 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But I like the it's so cold in this house. The coldness described can be understood both literally and figuratively. The house is literally cold. They can't afford to pay their heating bill. Fuel poverty is a growing problem in the UK. This tells us that this is a poor household, likely to be experiencing other struggles. And of course, it's a powerful image. Picture children shivering beneath blankets. Metaphorically, the house could be lacking in warmth. That is care, love, and affection. The house is empty of strong relationships. And there's a black and white photo of like a kid on a mattress, like looking sad.
I love the like socio-political angle of like, you know, we know how things are in the UK, all right? We know what these people are going through.
Yeah, yeah. As we all know, the UK is the only country that's struggling to pay the bills.
Yeah, yeah. Oh God. What I like about looking at Genius, let me pull that page up. Is I was looking at earlier, and I like how it'll have like what you just pulled out. It has this paragraph about what "it's so cold in this house" could mean, but then there's no comment on the chorus, like drinking poison, like eating glass.
The part that actually has like imagery.
Exactly. Yeah, I was like, oh, they just thought this was straightforward. Oh god.
Yeah, I also like at the bottom.
Do you want me to annotate that and say like these are unwise choices?
Yeah. Eating glass hurts.
This would be like poison because it will kill you.
This could just be a reference to the crutch of alcoholism.
Do you like the bottom of the pages when somebody has like tried to give like an overview of like the song's context? Where they're here, they're saying like this was inspired by a remix of a Smith song. Its drum track was deliberately mixed louder than usual to add emphasis to the album's opening. Wow.
I love, like, those are the tips I need for when I'm trying to record at home, you know?
Yeah, make it loud, baby.
Yeah.
But also, that's like, the whole album, like, the drums are mixed, like, really loud because it's like a dance record. Like, no shit, dude.
Yeah. I totally forgot it had those, like, song summaries, and that reminds me when I was in, like, 10th grade and when Hampton moved in and lived with me and my parents and exposed me to, like DIY punk and hardcore. I remember in like my English class, I had to write like, I don't know, it was like some assignment we had to do about like learning to like critically analyze a text. But our teacher, because she was cool, she was like, you can do it with song lyrics. And so I remember doing like using like Song Genius or whatever to like talk about like Operation Ivy songs for a paper. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember who it was. And like, I love Operation Ivy like quite a bit. And I think those are great lyrics. And I think Jesse Michaels is like pretty underrated in general. Yeah. But, and I'm trying to remember who, it might come to me later, but some singer that I like, who I think of as politically minded in some way, saying like, everything I need to know about politics, I learned from analyzing Operation Ivy lyrics. Like, what are you talking about?
That's awesome. That's such a good quote.
Like artificial life. Whoa.
Yeah. Oh my god, that's great.
Mark, do you like Op Ivy or what?
I've never listened to Operation Ivy. I know that there is an Operation Ivy cover on the live Real Big Fish album that I like. But I usually skip that song.
Cool word. When I went to high school, it's for context, the year I started high school was 2007, I think. Yeah, 2007. There were a lot of people wearing Disturbed shirts. I always saw that logo and thought, like, everybody has like these weird knockoff Op Ivy shirts at my high school. And how embarrassed was I the first time I was like, yo, I like Operation Ivy too. And everybody was like, what are you talking about? I was like, oh, they're just like a cool ska band. So, sorry.
I remember one of the first punk things I did as a kid. I think Operation Ivy was like maybe one of the first punk bands Hampton showed me. It was like them and like Gorilla Biscuits or something.
Cool.
And I remember Hampton would like, he used some stencils back then a good bit, and he made a stencil of the Operation Ivy like album, like the guy jumping through the wall or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just remember stenciling that on like my school binders. And then punk became my identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you never looked back.
Exactly.
Hey, is this weird? I'm going to change the subject and then we're going to go into your next song.
Okay.
Today at work, I had a meeting. I work from home. Mm-hmm. Not to brag, but I do. So I was on a Zoom meeting. And by the way, with a guy who's named Greg, and the first time we had a meeting, I was like, hey, my dead name is Greg. That makes us like we kind of like kind of know how each other operate, huh? Like, I thought that was really funny.
Yeah.
And he was like, what are you talking about?
Oh, no.
So I thought that was funny, but today during our meeting I sneezed, and he like stopped and he was like, oh my god, are you okay? And he like was like very concerned, and I was like, no, it's just a sneeze. Is that weird? It seems like an outsized reaction to like a mild sneeze.
I mean, it may be a little
weird about Greg.
Yeah. Can I tell you a story about a strong reaction to a sneeze that I had?
please.
Yes.
When I was in college, when I was in the chorale, we were doing our dress rehearsal for a concert, and you know, we were doing like some mass or something, something that ended with a big amen, and I had to sneeze so bad that I like sneezed in the pause between the syllables of the amen, and the hot shot opera singer guy who was like just a dick to everyone else turned around and was like, "If you do that in the concert, I'm going to murder you on stage."
Oh. Wow. It's crazy that you say that, because like I've never had the experience of an opera singer like being really dramatic. That was a joke.
Yeah. Never.
Never. No,
I find that hard to believe.
Yeah, singers, especially sopranos, are famously level-headed.
You know, when I was dating my ex, I was really surprised. I didn't know anything about like the classical world of music, or just kind of, I guess, like the professional world of music. And I had so much fun hearing her talk about how the egos involved was,
oh, yeah.
I mean, I felt bad for her hearing some of the things she dealt with, but outsider looking in, it was kind of hilarious.
Yeah. But I will also say like, because I live in both worlds.
Yeah.
Right. It is just equally weird explaining DIY stuff like politics to like a professional classical musician.
Yeah.
Cause you're like, yeah. And then like this fucking band, like they left early. like they didn't watch all the other bands, and it's like that, you know, they're fucking assholes. And everybody's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. When, me and Bethany were dating, we had a lot of fun kind of learning, exchanging cultural information between these two worlds that need, like, you know, we were each in a different world, and there's I don't know, shit's so funny.
Yeah, real fucking weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I was recently complaining about a famous composer who lives in Boston, who like goes to premieres or goes to like concerts where like her stuff is getting played, but uh-huh. She'll leave like as soon as her pieces are done. And I was like complaining about this to somebody else, and I was like, it's like really fucking rude. Like, we're here to build a community. and the other person was like, no, they're not though. That's not why they're here. And I was like, oh yeah, like that's why I'm here. Oops.
Yeah, you're like, whoops. Oh, that's good. That's really funny.
What song are you going to talk about next?
We can talk about Dream Told by Moto by the Minutemen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know you as a big Minutemen fan.
I am. I'm a huge Minutemen fan. And they're a band. I'm always listening to the Minutemen. And I'm always jumping between what album I think is the best album, and they all are.
I kind of agree with this. Although, to be honest, Buzzer Howell is kind of my vote.
I think that's where I usually fall. I think it's like perfect. And it's like, I mean, I love Double Nickels, but Buzzer Howell's so contained. And this song specifically, with like the kind of like, I don't know, there's just this like bizarre, like jazzy angle to it, as is like a lot of their music. But something about like the rhythm section of Dream Told by Moto, it's one of my favorite things in music, like ever.
Yeah.
I, to this day, don't know how to feel about the lyrics of the one line of lyrics in this song. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, like, I don't know, like, what is that about? Why write a line like that? But then I also feel like it just adds to almost like the mania of the song.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I like how the whole record is 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like, it would take us, probably 45 seconds to read the lyrics for the entire thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I think, like, this is usually my vote for, like, what I would choose to listen to if I'm going to listen to, like, a full Minutemen record. Just because I think Double Nickels, like, isn't actually that long, but it feels very long sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
I think because they were just making so many choices, like, off the cuff, that sometimes it feels to me, like, not as cohesive. Whereas, like, Buzzer Howell feels like there's a through line all the way.
Yeah,
from point A to point B.
I completely agree with that. I was reading that the other day. I was reading that, like, apparently when they did Double Nickels, they essentially recorded it all, and then they each, like, you know, it's like a double LP, and they each got a side of a record that they just chose their favorite songs, and then the last side, the D side or whatever, was just the leftovers. And so I definitely think that contributes to they're not feeling like a through line, because then you just have, like, people picking favorite songs over 45 songs or whatever. But yeah, Buzzer Howell to me is always, like, I don't know, it's just an album. Anytime I put it on, I just listen to the whole thing. It just feels like a continuous, like, track to me.
Yeah, no, totally. And yeah, like, I think Double Nickels, like, works, like, when you read about all the stuff that they did to make it happen,
yeah,
you're like, this shouldn't work as well as it does.
Yeah.
But yeah, Buzzer Howell is just like, feels like really like kind of like laser focused. And D Boon dies, what, like a month after this comes out, right?
I think so. Yeah. Is there a release date you have pulled up or anything for that?
It comes out in November of 83. And does he die in December?
I think he died in 84.
Oh really? Okay. So
a
year later.
Yeah, because they released another
85.
Album. Oh, okay. Because they released Project Mersch and Three Way Tie for Last, I think.
That's true.
I will say maybe those Minutemen albums aren't as good as the first four.
Yeah. Is Three Way Tie for Last the one? Hold on, is it the one I think it is? No, what's the one where, like, everybody... Oh, Ballot Result. Ballot Result is the one that I think I don't like.
Okay, yeah. I think I'm less familiar with that one, I think.
It's live, right? Or, yeah, it's live, where they were, like, letting people vote on what they were going to record.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, it just feels like sometimes that band had, like, really interesting ideas, but failed to make them, like, get from point A to point B. But always, like, the individual songs are always so fucking good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I definitely, like, I feel like, it's funny, I feel like they were literally all over the place, and that's a thing I like, I don't know, there's a lot of bands I will see, and I will be like, oh, this band's all over the place, but I don't mean it in a good way. Like, it's, I don't know, something about however they wrote and the way those songs and records came together, like, it still maintained that you were listening to the same band in between these different songs, even though they were so far apart from each other on like a spectrum.
Yeah, they always like, I will never not be really enamored with like how that band was in the thick of like American hardcore.
Yeah.
And maintained like a really unique sound that like nobody has ever really replicated.
Yeah.
And it is like so true to them. And I love like, I love listening to Mike Watt talk about music.
Me too. I love all of his weird Pedro slang or whatever all of that is that he says.
Do you know the story about him having diarrhea while he's in the Stooges?
Wait, I feel like I've heard this before, but I can't remember exactly.
Okay, so as I know the story, it's like he gets the call to be the fill-in bass player for the Stooges reunion. Yeah. And they're like about to go on stage, like on like one of the first shows. And he just has like food poisoning like crazy. And he says like Iggy, he's like, we got to stall for like 10 minutes. Like I got to take a shit. And Iggy's basically like, no. And so Mike Watt's solution was he got a bunch of bungee cords and like tied off the bottom of his pants. and just went on stage and started playing. And I think as he tells it afterwards, he went into the alleyway so Iggy Pop could rinse him off with a hose.
Yeah, I have heard that story. I was trying to remember if it had something to do with like, I was like, yeah, he stuffs his pants in his boots or something and just yeah, shits in his pants.
That absolute fucking freak.
Dude, what a legend, honestly.
Yeah. Mark, do you like the Minutemen?
In a casual way, I can't really speak about their albums, but I'm generally pleased when I hear the Minutemen. There's a feedback happening for a lot of this song while the bass and drums are grooving. That is like really hits me right in the tinnitus. And so this particular song is a little tough for me and my cats, but broadly I am pro Minutemen.
Yeah
I mean that's what you get when you record your best EP for $50.
Yeah I think this album so interesting too. I was reading about it like a week ago just to try to prep for this. And I know just, like, in the process of them recording it, there was a lot of just random experimental shit going on with them. Like, just in the studio on the fly. Just kind of... Like, I know I was reading one of the songs where there's, like, a trumpet playing, and it just sounds insane. It's like, D. Boone playing it, and I was reading it. Someone else is on, like, guitar for one of the tracks instead of D. Boone. But yeah, I really just enjoy the bizarre nature of some of the songs on this album.
Yeah.
There's one. I mean, I don't know the name off the top of my head. I'm not looking at the track list. I'm really bad. I don't know if y'all are like this. I'm really bad at listening to bands, and I will know songs, but I won't know what the hell the name is because I just like listen to it without looking at a track list.
I think their song titles are hard to remember because they don't often say them in the song.
Yeah, that's a good point. One of the songs on that album that just has like some very like simple walking bass line, and it's just like. It's like two or three people are just talking over each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. I love it. I love just like the bizarreness of it all.
Yeah. I think more than like kind of any band of that era, they were like, we listen to everything. And like, even though we're like sort of a punk band, like we just kind of do whatever the fuck we want to.
Yeah.
But like earlier I was saying, like, I love like listening to Mike Watt talk about music because like, even like now with, you know, 50 years of like historical context of like the thing that he created, he's always like, punk isn't a sound. It's just like an attitude. And like,
yeah,
Like he has this very, like, very, like, kind of like liberal and like expansive view of like what punk means.
Yeah.
And that's really cool. I always ask this to people when Minutemen comes up. Have you listened to the Minute Flag record?
I didn't know about it until like a year ago. And I did listen to it. I only listened to it like once or twice, like in one day, and I haven't gone back to it. So I don't even hardly remember it.
Okay. I think it's really cool.
Okay. Well, you know, I actually, the reason I ended up listening to it was because me and my ex, we were playing in some bands together, and we did like a, like kind of like a weird experimental thing where we learned like, we played like Waiting Room by Fugazi, but like she was playing on like her upright bass, and we had like, she had these ideas to put all these like weird pauses in it and just kind of chop the song up in weird ways. And we were just kind of playing with like some punk songs, and then she asked us to learn some like some jazz songs with her. But god damn it, I literally just lost the train of thought I had of the point I was getting at. Fuck me.
That's okay. here, I'll tell you that.
That's okay. I'm having a great time imagining the Waiting Room riff on an upright bass.
It was sick.
Somebody recently told me that I talk about Fugazi like they're the Beatles, and I think that's really funny.
That's awesome. That can apply to me as well. I have a friend that does not like Fugazi and loves to make fun of them to me, but I love it. I remembered what I was going to say. We covered, she suggested covering, it's a Black Flag song off of their like last album that's like a weird experimental album.
Oh, Family Man?
No, it's later than that. Like Henry Rollins is...
Oh, like Loose Nut?
Oh, it's later than that.
What's the one after Loose Nut? I know what you're talking about. I Can See You.
No, hold on.
Oh wait, their actual last album?
Maybe. There's like a Beelzebub goat man on it, I think. There's Maybe I'm making that up. Goat. I could be making that up. Hold on.
Do you mean the reunion album? Oh, In My Head?
Hold on. Let me pull my Spotify up and find the song. It's nothing you've named so far, as I remember.
Well, I just named most of their records.
There's a Beelzebub Goatman looking into a microscope on the process of weeding out.
That's it.
Oh, okay.
And there's a song on it called Your Last Affront that we covered. But it's cool. It's really weird, like, noisy avant-garde shit. And I am usually pretty miss on a lot of that kind of stuff. But something about it is really cool to me. It's really interesting you can tell it's just like some shit Greg Ginn just ended up writing. And it's interesting. It's like that natural progression from like the bizarreness of his guitar playing in like, you know, the Nervous Breakdown EP or whatever. And to that point, it's cool. Aside from my disdain for Greg Ginn.
Yeah, I mean... Obviously, like, fuck Greg Ginn.
Yeah.
That dude's a fucking psychopath.
Yeah.
Fucking prick. But mid-period Black Flag, when he is like, we are like an experimental, like, improv-y jazz band, is so fucking cool.
Yeah, that's a lot of what this stuff kind of is on Your Last Affront. It's cool. I think it's cool because it leans into like that experimental, like avant-garde jazz thing, but it maintaining that like hardcore punk like intensity and like mania.
Yeah, totally. That's why I love the Family Man record. But I think that's just really cool. But yeah, I think if you're into that, like, you should revisit Minute Flag.
Okay, I'm gonna make sure I do that then.
It's a cool, I mean, it's just like Greg Ginn going bonkers with Mike Watt. Like, it's awesome. Yeah.
I recently, like a year or two ago, I had never listened to any of Mike Watt's solo stuff. And I know a lot of people don't like it, but I
love it.
I really enjoy it. I, like, what is at first album, like Ball Hog or the
Ball Hog or Tugboat.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, man, yeah. That's such an awesome album. And then I really like Hyphenated Man a whole lot.
Hyphenated Man is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I don't know why I put off listening to it for so long. But I also know if I listened to it when I was younger, I wouldn't have liked it because of like weird exclusive punk music brain, you know.
Oh yeah, sure. Have you listened to the band Jumpstarted Plowhards?
Uh-uh.
Oh, I'll send this to you. This is really cool. It's Mike Watt and Todd Congaleer from like Toys That Kill, and
okay,
he runs like Recess Records.
Okay, I've never listened to Toys That Kill, but sounds cool.
So it's those two. They put out two records. Every song has a different drummer.
Okay.
It's real fucking good. I like that band a lot.
Cool. I'll definitely check it out. Yeah, I mean, I love Mike. Like, honestly, for me, like, Minutemen, like, D Boone, Mike Watt, George Hurley, all of them are so influential to me as a musician that it's just, like, anything any of them were a part of, I'm interested in.
Do you listen to Mike's podcast at all?
I've heard, like, an episode or two, but no. I never have.
Oh, it's really good.
But, yeah, a friend of mine that I work with, he's, like, grew up here in Jackson in the punk scene too, isn't really really into, like, he plays in some punk bands here, and he's recommended it to me a couple times. That and what is the one fucked up singer, Turned Out a Punk.
Turned Out a Punk is crazy.
Really? Every now and then, yeah. I follow Damien on Instagram and I'll like see him post about people like that have ties to punk, and every time I'm like, man, this is cool. He did one, I specifically remember he showed how Avril Lavigne was tied to like a bunch of straight edge hardcore bands in Canada, and I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah. So Mark, or listeners, whatever. Mike Watt has this great podcast called The Watt from Pedro Show, that comes out once a week. It's 3 hours and it's just him playing music, and he has like such a diverse appetite for listening. It's pretty bonkers. Most episodes I have only heard of a single band that he plays, like a lot of like really cool international stuff, but he starts every episode by playing John Coltrane, which I think is very cute. But yeah, that podcast fucking rules. I've found like so many bands that I never would have heard of through that. And then Damien Abraham's podcast is called Turned Out a Punk. That is just him talking to people who were or are involved with punk. And he also just has like encyclopedia brain in like a really terrifying way. Where, you know, like, you know, he'll talk to whoever and he'll be like, yeah, so like I tracked down like the demo CDR that you put out in like 2001. Or whatever, and they're like, how?
I need to listen to more of Mike Watt's podcast, because I am so bad these days about finding new music.
It's hard to keep up.
Yeah,
it's helpful if you do a podcast where other people make you listen to music.
Yeah, I bet this is a great way to learn about music. I'm gonna rip y'all's podcast off and just start doing the same thing down here.
Hell yeah. Yeah, call it Mississippi Sandwich.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we should start a song sandwich franchise.
Yeah.
That's Jinx. A good idea.
But I like episodes like this where you choose two songs that I know intimately, so I don't have to do that much research.
fair, yeah.
Yeah, same. It was very helpful.
Thanks, Zach.
Anytime.
Do you want to talk about your third song?
Yeah, my third song is Arc Arsenal by At the Drive-In. Man, I had doing this when you asked me to pick three songs. It was like it felt so difficult to, like, I don't know why. Someone be like, pick three songs, because I'm like, what type of three songs do I want to pick? But I had to choose this one for the same reason or similar reasons to Block Party, that like one of my older brother's friends showed. I was in like maybe sixth or seventh grade, and he showed me like the live video of At the Drive-In playing on Letterman. And
the video.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
totally.
that was my introduction to them. And I instantly, what it was me and like a friend were playing Guitar Hero, and my brother's friend Andrew was like, oh, you need to be playing like, you're the dudes at the Drive-In. And we're like, we don't know what you're talking about. And he showed us that video. And me and my friend were just like instantly like obsessed. And to this day, like, to talk about the song in a second, but just the band in general, like, to this day, I feel like their energy and their stage presence, like, will always influence the way I approach like playing music live.
Totally.
Me and Hampton were talking about this yesterday. Like, we were just talking about how, like, I don't know. I feel like I see so many bands that like don't really like physically, like, you know, they're killing the song or whatever, but they're just kind of like in place, not doing much. And just when I see a band, the visceral feeling I get when I see a band like going nuts, it's like unmatched. And
yeah.
So of course when I play, I feel just like such, if I'm like not going nuts when I'm playing, I'm like, what would I even, why am I even doing this? But I chose Arc Arsenal. This is another band that was hard for me to choose a song, because like the Minutemen, I'm always jumping between like albums that I think I like more.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just feel like kind of like Mark mentioned about, or maybe it was a genius comment. Thinking about the like Eating Glass, like that intro for that album, it's like so. It kind of like stands out amongst all the other songs to me, and it's like so powerful of a introduction to an album. And I feel the same way about Arc Arsenal. That intro, that drum rhythm, and that fucking weird ass guitar line, and all the effects they have on it, and like the atmosphere that gets generated before that like snare hit and the bass line and the song kicking in. It's just so intense. It's a song I've listened to like a million times, and it never doesn't get me like excited hearing that intro.
Totally. Yep. I like, so this is a record I could, or especially this song, like, did not have to re-listen to this. I know this song like inside and out.
Same.
But I was very excited to have a good excuse to re-listen to the record today.
Yeah.
And yeah, the whole time, I mean, I have some opinions about the last four songs in this record, but yeah, like, so fucking hyped. The energy on this record is unbelievable. Do you know any of the stories about Ross Robinson on this?
No. Who is that?
So he produced it.
Okay. No, I don't really know. I know very little, actually, about At the Drive-In.
Okay. So Ross Robinson, is, I guess, probably most famous for, like, doing production work for, like, Slipknot and Korn.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But also, Mark, or Zach, are you, I don't know, are you a Blood Brothers fan?
I have a lot of friends that are big Blood Brothers fans, and I've listened to their albums a couple times, and, like, I don't dislike it, but I've yet to get, like, really hooked. Like,
sure.
The fans that I know are, like, super hooked on them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're, like, in my, you know, pantheon of great bands.
Yeah.
But, like, he produced, like, their third album.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's, like, known for just, like, really fucking loud, intense records. But there's all these stories about him producing Relationship of Command, and, like, the thing that, like, the story that I know is that he showed up at an At the Drive-In show, like, before, obviously before this record came out, and was like, you have never found a producer that will actually match the energy of your band.
Yeah.
In the studio. And he was like, the reason you should work with me is not because, like, I usually produce bands that sound like you, is because, like, I can get that sound out of you. But the stories about how he achieves this are, like, kind of fucked up, and, like, you can't argue with results, but they are fucked up. Like, there's, like, these stories about, like, him, like, going to the booth while, like, Jim Ward is, like, recording guitar tracks, and him just, like, screaming at him and, like, berating him, and, like, I'm trying to remember exactly what he says. I have a book that has, like, a whole chapter about recording this record. But something he says to Jim, like, to this day, Jim Ward is like, I will not talk to that guy. Like, that was, like, traumatic.
That's wild. I'll have to find that book to read about all of that.
It's called Sellout.
Okay. Okay. You know, the results are there because, seriously, that album, like, I really love In Casino Out and Vaya, or Vaya, however you pronounce it. And, but neither of them, like, the intensity really is captured on Relationship of Command in a way that does not come through in the other albums.
There's another band I love called Dead Cross, which is like, oh, sorry, Mark.
I was just going to say that Ross Robinson also did the first two Glassjaw albums.
Oh, okay.
And I think that first Glassjaw album very much sort of has the same success of capturing an extremely intense live band.
I've never listened to Glassjaw, but that makes me want to listen to Glassjaw.
I think that first album is really good. You know, be prepared for some misogynistic lyrics, but
classic.
You know,
I was gonna say, there's a band that he produced called Dead Cross, which is like people from The Locust and Mike Patton. But there's like this story about like their bassist Justin Pearson like recording, and Ross Robinson like coming into the room and like throwing him against a wall and being like, "You need to be more intense." like real crazy motherfucker.
That's nuts. I could not imagine being in an. I mean, that's how I talk to myself in my head when I'm recording music, but I could not imagine that being a reality in a recording space.
Yeah, I like, so like we just finished recording an album like a couple months ago, and we did it a little bit differently than we used to, where we hired somebody to produce, and like historically I've like recorded all my vocals like by myself, but this time like I was doing it, like with people, and I was like really benefiting from people being like, I don't think you're actually getting like the whatever like dramatic thing you want out of that. But I don't know if I would, like, really like somebody, like, you know, physically assaulting me to get
the sound. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you know, I've always wanted, I mean, I've only recording I've ever done has been like in the most DIY. It's all usually just been with Hampton.
Yeah.
And I've always wanted the experience of like working in like a professional space or I guess working with someone like, I don't know. I can just imagine you get interesting, like different feedback working in a different setting like that you wouldn't usually get in like your normal way of like recording and producing an album.
Yeah, totally. I think at least this time around, like having a different set of ears on things like took us in a really different direction, which was cool.
Yeah.
So we talked about the Letterman performance for a second, which is like. Legendary. It's like a thing I watch all the time. We filmed like a big video over the weekend.
Yeah.
And like before takes, I was like rewatching parts of the Letterman video.
Oh hell yeah.
Because that is like such a like Rosetta Stone for like performance.
Yeah.
But the other performance that I love, well, there's actually two that I want to mention.
Uh-huh.
Have you watched the one that they did on Conan?
No, I don't think so.
It's a little harder to find. Okay. It is as equally unhinged as the Letterman, except Cedric is also has two microphones, and one of them is going through like a bunch of pedals, and he's just like pitch shifting his voice during it.
I have to find this video.
But at the end, this is something Paul and I talk about like all the time. At the end, Cedric and Omar don't finish the song. They jump over the amps and run away. and like Jim has to like finish singing the song.
Oh my god, love it.
But the other one is like, have you've watched the Big Day Out video, I assume.
I haven't seen it in forever. The video I get hung up on is the one where they're like playing in the classroom somewhere, like when they're really young.
Yeah.
That's a video I go to all the time. I can't remember the Big Day Out video off the top of my head.
So this is Big Day Out is like a very big festival in Australia.
Yeah.
And like the year that At the Drive-In played, like it was right after Relationship of Command came out. They were like the band that people were like really fucking hyped to see.
Yeah.
They had like so much buzz. And they're basically at this point going through, I guess, like the Beatles thing of like,
yeah,
people at this show are going so fucking insane. Somebody is going to get hurt. They get through three songs and they leave the stage.
Holy shit.
And the three songs they do are out of fucking control. It's so good.
Yeah.
Like that band having a huge like stadium sized stage is really, really cool.
Yeah. I had a chance to see them a couple years ago. They like played in New Orleans. It was after they released like that new album. I never even listened to it.
Inter Alia?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think I got sick. I something came up and I didn't get to go to the show. And I still hate that because I don't know what their live shows are like now, but I think it would still be sick.
Yeah, I think I also like they played in Boston on that tour. I remember when that happened. I definitely could have gone. I just decided not to, but I think it would have been cool just to say that I was there.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But that but so Big Day Out, like they after maybe like the second song, Cedric is like, "You guys got to chill out, like somebody's going to get hurt, fucking stop." They get through the third song and he makes this amazing speech that I think about all the fucking time because he's also obviously like just like totally fucked up on like meth or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's like, "I keep looking out into the crowd expecting to see people, but all I see are fucking sheep." And then he starts like baaing at them.
Now that you mentioned this speech, I do remember this video entirely now. Oh my god, yeah, that's so good.
Yeah.
Oh man. I remember it's funny, I remember being like younger and getting into punk and like being into Fugazi and At the Drive-In, but then seeing videos where they'd tell people not to mosh and being a young punk, I was like, that's fucking dumb, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's so funny. I don't know, I always just laugh about the maybe the stupidity of childhood and being like, violence is cool.
Yeah, there's a specific crowd surfing memory I have of me at a streetlight show, Streetlight Manifesto.
Yeah.
Mark at the station in Portland. Not to brag. where every time I think about it, I'm like, man, I could have fucking killed somebody.
Yeah, yeah. You know, how the punk kids are stupid, I guess.
Can we talk about the lyrics of this song?
Yeah, yeah. This is a band I like never actually know half the lyrics to.
Yeah, because his lyrics are fucking nonsense.
Exactly.
It's absolute gibberish.
Yeah.
And this is why, like, in the Mars Volta, like, Omar, like, started writing lyrics for Cedric because he was like, you're not writing about anything. You're just saying words. So apparently, there's according to Genius, Arc Arsenal is rumored to be about Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yeah, I read that today too, and I was so surprised.
Mark, did you know that?
I did not know that.
Okay, so
I can't say that I've ever thought about the lyrics of this song before.
So, I know a lot of At the Drive-In lyrics very well because Derive did an At the Drive-In cover set once. But they were so hard to memorize because they're nonsense.
Yeah, I'll never forget when y'all played Hattiesburg and y'all covered One Arm Scissor and you had me do vocals for it. And I was like, I really don't actually know most of the words to this song.
I have no memory of that.
Yeah, yeah. Y'all played with... It wasn't at the Porn Hall. It was at this other house that I don't remember what the name of it was. Y'all played with my band Disco Lemonade. That was like a 3-piece that I like played guitar and did vocals for.
The Slammer.
Yeah, maybe.
The Archive Doesn't Lie, baby.
Okay, The Slammer.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, look, it's we closed with One Arm Scissor.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, look at that. It's right there.
I didn't make it up.
I'm sorry for implying that you made it up. But yeah, the lyrics are fucking nonsense for this whole record. But okay, so the third line is sick and thirst keeps it together. Dahmer has a difficult time keeping his sanity together as his thirst for murder overwhelms him. Okay.
Where are the sources? I want to know why the song is apparently about Jeffrey Dahmer.
I don't know. I would not be surprised if Cedric had said this, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess, you know, there is the line, at the end he's like saying, have you ever tasted skin?
Yeah, that's the one part of the lyrics I was like, okay, all right, maybe they're right.
But then, like, okay, so Uproar East, Strike West, a reference to the famous book, The Art of War. It is an instruction to deceive an enemy. Cool.
Makes sense.
Yeah, it's a little
classic. Faint and flank. a crazy At the Drive-In lyric that I love on a different song on this album is... the opening line of Sleepwalk Capsules, where he just starts out by yelling,
oh, yeah,
taser,
yeah.
Taser, kindergarten, nap time.
I never realized those were the lyrics.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Could we... I know this is supposed to be about Arc Arsenal, but I want to talk about Enfilade for a second, because that song fucking rips.
Yes. Which one? I have to pull up.
That's the one that Iggy Pop is on.
Hold on.
Or no, excuse me. That's
is
actually
that
not
the
song
one
I want to talk about.
The weird, like, hostage message?
Yeah, it starts with the hostage
okay,
message.
Okay, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
But the song that I actually want to talk about is the other song that Iggy Pop is on, Rolodex Propaganda.
Oh, yeah.
Where they get to trade saying manuscript replica.
That song rips.
Yeah, that song's awesome.
That song is so fucking cool. And like Iggy Pop is just like being like the goofiest motherfucker the whole time.
I had no idea Iggy Pop was on that track until you just said it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and actually the story about this is really cool because like I think like on the schedule, like Ross is just like, yeah, so tomorrow we're going to do the vocals for Rolodex Propaganda. And they're like, okay, cool, cool, I'll be ready. And he's like, by the way, Iggy Pop is going to do backup vocals for you. And they're like, everybody in the band is like, what are you talking about?
That's so sick. Yeah, I never realized that was him.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah. It's totally, and I love just like the imagery of like the first great punk frontman, like handing it off to the next one, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. God, this is an album, again, I'm really bad at just like kind of forgetting what's on an album or song names, but looking at the track list, I'm like, oh yeah, I forget this perfect fucking album. Well, okay, yeah. I want to know, what were your thoughts? You said you have thoughts about the last couple of tracks on it.
Oh yeah, I get fucking bored with this record after, hold on a second. Actually, after Rolodex Propaganda, the last five songs, I just, like, I don't really care about.
Hold on, I'm looking at the track list.
Yeah, I think it does go on a little too long.
I get bored after Non-Zero Possibility.
Yeah.
You know, what's weird, whatever those Extracurricular and Catacombs, I swear, whatever copy or version of the CD I had when I was younger, it did not have those songs on it.
Yeah, you know, when I listened earlier, I just listened on Spotify, and I was like, I don't remember these.
Yeah.
And according to Genius, these are bonus songs. Can I go? Okay. I want to go grab my CD and see if... I'll be right back. We're going to check.
Sure.
You know...
A memory that I have about my physical copy of this CD is that it pretty immediately got scratched, and sure. So this song, Arc Arsenal, right after he, like, as soon as he gets to the second syllable of Faces on that first line, there's yeah. There was this crazy stutter and then it would skip to like 5 seconds ahead.
That's maybe the
because
worst
the way
time.
That I listened to this album the most was teaching myself to play drums. I often skipped this song and just started with Pattern Against User because of that scratch on the CD.
Yeah, that's pretty... You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. At the Drive-In is, like, before I ever got a drum kit, I was like... me and my cousin Hamson, who I lived with and played a lot of music with, we would play a lot of Rock Band, and we were like playing Rock Band drums on Expert. And we were like, we probably just need to get a drum kit so one of us can learn drums and we can start making music together. But I remember I like kind of taught myself to play drums by listening to At the Drive-In. I just remember driving around Hattiesburg, like drumming around on my steering wheel to this album and to In Casino Out like all the time before I had an actual drum kit.
I feel like a lot of people like our age have that experience of like, I half learned an instrument on Guitar Hero or Rock Band.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I think that's a great like utility for like at least muscle independence.
It teaches you the mechanics of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So confirmed. The original record does end with Non-Zero Possibility.
Okay.
So my actual answer is, I'm fine with the song Quarantined. I would probably skip it, but I like am not offended to hear it, I guess.
Yeah.
And Cosmonaut is like fine. I don't care about Non-Zero Possibility at all. This is really where you can like hear like Omar being like, I want to start the Mars Volta.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny, I couldn't even, again, with songs, I don't, off the top of my head, don't even know which one Quarantine or Cosmonaut are.
Yeah.
So I do feel like you're right. I feel like it starts losing steam the further it goes. And I was even going to say, I feel that way about that that Bloc Party album Silent Alarm. I feel like the last, like, I like all of it, but I feel like the last, like, four or five songs just slow down and like the intensity and definitely how much I enjoy them.
It's so hard to pace an album.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think about that a lot. Like on the new Cheap City record, like when we brought it to that producer, Josh, who will be coming on the podcast eventually. Did I schedule that? Oh fuck, I gotta follow up with him. But he, when I went to him, I was like, I wanna write a double album. And I like had a bunch of songs written, and he was like, no.
Yeah.
Don't do this. And I'm kind of glad that he talked me down to 12 songs instead of like 20.
Yeah. I have always, and I'm sure just like also being in punk and hardcore bands forever contributes to this, but like, I still just love writing, just putting out like 4 or 5 songs at a time on like a tape or something that could like comprise the length of a 7-inch.
Yeah.
Because like then I never worry about there being any songs that I feel like are like filler or maybe not filler is the right word, but just like might detract from like the whole experience, I guess.
Yeah. 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 Hey, speaking of filler, since I know you like Fugazi, do you like fuck with Discord, like the back catalog, that much?
Somewhat.
Did you get the 7-inch box set they put out last year?
No, I thought about it, but I had like recently spent a bunch of money on records and was like, okay, yeah. I'm gonna hold off.
Yeah.
Did you get it?
Yeah, hell fuck yeah, I got it. It's really cool. Not to rub it in, but it's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. After I didn't get it, I was kinda like, nah, shit, I probably should have just done it.
But do you know about the secret 7-inch that's in it?
I read about it, but I mean I haven't heard it or anything.
Yeah, it's I'll rip it for you if you want to hear it.
Okay.
It's not like, it's just kind of like a cool thing to hear. It's not like, wow, these songs are amazing.
But, sure.
Yeah, it's a cool object, and like, you know, the only fucking way anybody's ever gonna have the Minor Threat 7-inch. So
yeah, I had not long before that was being released had bought, there's like this big Husker Du record collection of like all their demos and like a kind of history book, and I had spent too much of my money getting that. So
yeah, I've been there as I try to kind of hide my big wall of records.
Yeah.
Nobody needs to know.
Yeah. What do you? How do you feel about the other At the Drive-In albums?
I will also have to look at track listings. In Casino Out, I feel like, let's take a look. Alpha Centauri, Hula Hoop Wounds, Napoleon Solo, all great songs. Could not tell you what any other song that record sounds like.
Yeah, that's also an album that I, the names mean nothing to me hardly. I know, I really like the second song, Chanbara, however it's pronounced. I don't know. I really like In Casino Out and Via a whole lot as well.
Do you have thoughts about Acrobatic Tenement?
I've listened to it. I've probably listened to it 3 times in my whole life, and no, I just remember not caring enough to ever keep listening to it.
I think the first song on it is really good.
Okay.
It's called Starslight.
Yeah.
And actually, if you look at like their Spotify, it seems like most people agree with me because that has 3.5 million plays, and the rest are like hovering around 500,000 or so, which I think is really funny.
I know I've heard it because I remember like listening, like finding it the first time and listening to it, and I remember like liking some of it, but I just remember overall being like, yeah, I'm fine with the other 3 albums.
Yeah, I mean, I think their songwriting gets better, but I do think like the Ross Robinson thing of like the energy isn't there on the records is totally correct.
I completely agree. Did you ever listen?
Yeah,
to it?
I think this was like.
Go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry.
I think being really into Relationship of Command and then buying In Casino out and like feeling the difference in the production was like early indication that punk aesthetic is not my thing in terms of recording quality.
Yeah, I think well, it's like the thing with the Minutemen, like they can totally get away with being like, we have the worst recording setup ever, and like we make it work for ourselves. Same with like the first Bad Brains record, which they recorded, like that record is like 20 minutes long and they recorded it in like 35 or something.
Yeah.
Like it sounds like shit, but it's awesome. Like I feel like At the Drive-In is like too, they just can't do it.
Yeah, I don't know why it doesn't translate for them. I almost wonder if it's because, like, I don't know.
I think it's too busy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I almost feel like...
Like, Minutemen is so sparse.
I think there's a difference, too, in, like speed. I think specifically, like, talking about, like, Bad Brains, or thinking about, like, Paranoid Time or something with the Minutemen, like...
Yeah.
It's... I don't know. And again, this is me just like punk brained, but like, I don't know. I think fast stuff like that, like it sounds well, but when this, like, you know, In Casino Out, it's a lot busier and it's slower. So a lot more of like the sound is actually coming through. And I think that makes it not as enticing as something like, you know, Sailing On or Paranoid Time.
Yeah. Yeah, because like Sailing On or like Pay to Come or whatever, like by the time you have a second to think about like what you're hearing, like the song's over.
Yeah. And you can't even like fully distinguish all the different like instruments, you know, if you're not on like a good stereo system, it's just kind of like a wall of sound almost.
Yeah, which is also just as much fun.
Yeah, it's great. It's awesome.
Do either of you like the Mars Volta?
I have only really listened to their first album, and I haven't listened to it a ton, but I do enjoy it.
What about you, Mark?
There are a couple songs on the first album that I enjoy quite a bit, and I think I listened to the second album a lot when it came out. But it was a little too... I wasn't ready for fusion in my life yet at that time.
It's a lot of my friends that are.
I bet if I went back now, I would love it.
Yeah. I want to try listening to that second album sometime because it's all of my friends that are like big Blood Brothers fans are also like big Mars Volta fans, and they're also who showed me like At the Drive-In and Block Party and so much of the music I listen to.
Yeah.
And it's also, I'm the type of person, like, I don't, the first time I listened to the Minutemen, I hated them. So I also know, like, time and place can really affect how I respond to something.
Yeah.
So I often will revisit bands, even if I don't like them at one point, you know?
I mean, that's my thing with, like, the Blood Brothers, who, like, I talk about on, I would say, probably every episode of this podcast. Like, the first time I heard them, I was like, this band is fucking stupid. And it took me a while to like kind of get it, but there's just like something about it where I was like, I feel like I should try again.
Yeah.
So again, weirdly, I think
that would have been my Blood Brothers experience if I had heard any song other than the first song that I heard.
Which was?
Love Rhymes with Hideous Car Wreck.
Oh, which sure. Is,
like, very chill and laid back.
Yeah, my first was Ambulance versus Ambulance.
See, the only song I think I can name is Set Fire to the Face.
Set Fire to the Face on Fire.
That song fucking rips.
Yeah.
There's another song I think from that album I'm familiar with too. Something Lightning?
We Ride Skeletal Lightning?
That's it. Yeah.
Which has my favorite Blood Brothers lyric, I think, which is the only thing that makes our blood feel like blood is stealing cars and watching lightning bolts fuck.
Yeah. I need to. It's been like 7 or 8 years since I've tried listening to them, and I want to re-listen to them now that I'm thinking about those songs.
Yeah, I mean, I feel most, again, okay, so most Blood Brothers fans don't love the last record. I think it's their best record. I think Mark is a crimes person, right?
Yeah, I mean, I like Young Machetes as well.
Yeah. But with Mars Volta, like, I know everybody loves De Laus in the Comatorium. I don't like that record at all. I'm very bored by that album. I think, like, the run of Francis the Mute through Bedlam and Goliath, I think, is perfect. I love Francis the Mute. And also, like, I think, like, the last two records where they're, like, truly just, like, a psychedelic, like, freakout band, I think are really cool.
Yeah, one of my friend who got me into At the Drive-In, like, I know Francis the Mute is one of his favorite albums, and I've just never heard it. I always remember seeing the poster, the album cover poster, like, in his bedroom and being like, that's cool, but never checked it out.
It's a cool poster, and, like, that's when that, I think, Omar specifically finally figures out, like, how do I, like, incorporate, like, Puerto Rican, like, rhythms.
Okay. That makes me want to check it out even more.
Yeah. Within, like, the weird, like, post-hardcore space that I live in.
Yeah.
Once the Mars Volta figures out how to groove, like, I think they get really fucking cool. Their performance on, have you watched their performance in the Henry Rollins show?
Nah.
Oh, you should check it out. It's really cool.
Okay, sick.
What song are they performing? Do you know?
I actually don't remember off the top of my head, but I could find out. The Blood Brothers also have a great Henry Rollins show performance.
I don't know if I've ever seen anything from the Henry Rollins show.
I mean, it's just him doing a talk show. It's like,
yeah,
it's fine.
I never know how I feel about Henry Rollins, honestly.
Yeah, which thing do you not like about Henry Rollins?
I don't know. Like, as a little kid, or, like, I mean, as, like, a teenager when I got into punk and, like, hardcore, like, I thought he was the fucking guy to be. Like, I remember reading Get in the Van and being like, this is the coolest book ever written, and then rereading it, like, a couple years ago and being like, good God, this guy needs help.
Yeah. I go back and forth. Like, I have a lot of his books. I think that he's so interesting. Like,
I do too.
I will never not be fascinated by him.
Same.
And I do like his kind of philosophy of, like, everything is interesting to try and everybody is interesting to talk to if you do it the right way.
Yeah.
But sometimes I'm like, you have such a, like, weirdly conservative mindset about some things. It's very strange. The Mars Volta song they play, Mark, they play Day of the Baphomets, and they play Tetragrammaton, which is probably not how you say that word.
Okay. There is the song that I like from Deloused is called Drunkship of Lanterns, and there was a great live video of them doing that on someone's TV show.
Ooh. I don't know.
And that song is very groovy.
The Henry Rollins show is like, I don't know, he, like, interviews, like, Oliver Stone. I remember that. He has, like, John Waters.
Interesting.
But yeah, it's like really just, he, like, interviews some people, there's probably, like, some dumb, like, skits, and then, like, a band plays.
Okay.
I don't think it's worth watching other than, like, tracking down just, like, the bands that play on it.
Yeah.
I don't know. At the Drive-In's really fucking good.
Yeah, for real. I'm so jealous y'all did a cover set. I've always wanted to try to get people down here to do a cover set of that band. But I don't know a ton of people here that are, like, crazy about At the Drive-In.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, fucking move up here, dude.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like I needed to do.
There's libraries in New England. Probably sure. more of them, to be honest.
There are. I've definitely looked around. I've looked at jobs kind of all over the country, and there's actually a ton of jobs up there.
Yeah. Should move to fucking Providence.
It just sounds expensive up there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'll think about it.
Yeah. I remember, like, I think at one point in my life, I was like, should I move to Mississippi? Because I like everybody there. Yeah. And I was looking at the rent, and I was like, fuck, I like... Damn, fuck New England.
Yeah, it's so that's the hardest thing for me when I think about leaving. It's just like, I mean, we also like the pay is lower here than other places in the country, but it is like still some of the cheapest rent I've seen anywhere.
What's your rent?
I currently live with my parents.
Nice, fuck yeah, you do.
Because I can't afford to live on my own.
But the rent is so cheap, I thought.
Yeah, well, it is.
I'm just joking. I'm sorry.
If I would just, I mean, I could get a roommate and get a place to live, but I'm like, I don't know, I'm so picky about roommates, and
yeah,
I can save money living with my parents, and I get along with my parents, so I'm like, yeah, whatever, I'll deal with this for a little while.
I lived with my parents for like 3 years in my late 20s, so
yeah. But I don't know, I feel like most rent for like the last place I was living at before I moved back here was like $800 a month.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, I was splitting it with someone too. So, I mean, it was just like 400.
Oh, that's for the whole fucking apartment?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
It was cool.
Oh my God. All right. Cool. Let's all disclose our rents. Mine is $1,500.
Oh God.
But I live by myself and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds nice.
Yeah.
I mean, mine is more than that for a significantly smaller space in a much smaller town.
Yeah, why is that, Mark?
You know, like many other rural states, Maine's government is almost entirely run by Ron Swanson types whose goal is to sabotage the government from doing anything useful. And as a result, like Maine has the most abusive and predatory landlords in the whole country.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
It's a lot like that in Mississippi. Not so much necessarily the landlords, but pretty much everything else.
Yeah. Well, Zach, do you have any records come out? Do you put out something like today, didn't you?
A new band I'm in called Hammer and the Tools put out like a little 3-song demo, like a day ago.
Cool. I haven't listened yet. I'm excited to.
You should check it out.
I'm going to. Can we play a song from that on this at the end?
Yeah, that's fine.
Cool. What song do you want?
You pick. You listen and you pick which one you think is your favorite.
Okay. It's on Mark because Mark's editing this one.
Okay.
Oh, shit.
All right. I guess you'll find out what my favorite song of yours is.
I can't wait.
Is there anything else you want to plug, Zach?
Yeah. I'll just plug. We have this tape label here in Jackson called Psychic Hand Tapes that people can find at psychichandtapes601.bandcamp.com. And it's pretty much just me and some friends here putting out a bunch of just like punk and hardcore related stuff. It's also a shameless self plug because I'm like in every band we've put out so far because only like 6 people, oh that's a lie, maybe like 10 people in this whole city play like punk and alternative music, so there's a lot of incestuous band crossover.
Yeah, that's cool though.
Yeah.
Word. When I was grabbing my At the Drive-In CD, I noticed that I still have my Disco Lemonade tape.
Oh heck yeah!
I definitely have every tape that you gave me. All the Hattiesburg tapes, I definitely have that I was or bought. Yeah.
I'll mail you some tapes next time I make some. I haven't made tapes.
Yes, please. I'd like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like tapes.
You and me both.
I'll mail you some tapes.
Please do.
Okay, cool. Fucking done deal, dude.
All right.
So you're gonna come to New England?
Yeah.
Cool. I'm gonna come to Jackson.
Okay.
In August, I decided. Okay. I was looking at our tour route and just decided, fuck it, I'm changing it.
Yeah, if y'all want to reschedule your route, just let me know the date and we'll hook it up.
Cool. Yeah. I don't give a shit what the band thinks about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who needs Chicago or whatever? I don't know.
Dude. What does Chicago have that Jackson, Mississippi doesn't have? That's what I've always said.
Nothing.
That's
honestly.
Right.
Do you have a giant metal bean?
I'm sure if you look long enough in Jackson, you'll find something similar to a giant metal bean.
Okay. Do you have a massive lake?
There's a river. There's a pretty polluted river.
Oh, yeah. Fuck yeah, there
is. Which might be cooler than a massive lake.
Cool. last time I was in Jackson, I don't know, I probably got french fries at Whataburger, probably.
If you were in Jackson, you definitely went to Whataburger, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably all I have to say about being in Jackson.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, there's really not much at all going on in Jackson. Let's be honest.
Cool. You're really selling it. Can't wait to go.
The one thing Jackson has going for right now is the music community, the music scene here is probably the best it's been in, like, probably 10 years at least, as far as, like, how many people are involved and how many bands are making music.
Cool.
So there's your reason to come to Jackson.
Well, I had a reason, which was to see my friend. But
that's fair. Well, there's another reason. There's a reason for other people.
Oh, okay. Because,
yeah.
I'm the only person who would want to be friends with a fucking freak like you.
That's right.
Cool. Thanks for doing this. Mark, do you want to do, like, a sign-off slogan real quick?
I'm curious about why this river is so polluted now.
Let's talk about the river.
About that for a little bit.
I can't tell you exactly why. I just know it's... it's the Pearl River. It just, there's probably a long history of, like, illegal dumping into this river, and I'm sure there's some type of, I don't know, the city of Jackson loves to cut corners with anything safety related. I'm sure an investigative journalist could spill the tea for everyone.
Mark, I think the next Song Sandwich miniseries should be, like, us, like, doing Serial, but to investigate the river in Jackson.
Well, you know, I'm on Google Maps now, and I'm seeing some pretty pathetic shoreline buffer zones on this reservoir. So. There you go.
There it is.
Thank you, Mark. Mark, would you like to do your sign-off slogan now?
Do I have a sign-off slogan? I feel like you're usually the one that says the Olive Garden line.
Yeah, but I just thought I didn't want to. I just thought it would be nice for you to do it this time.
Well, you know, thanks for listening to another rollicking episode of Song Sandwich.
Killing it.
You know, sign up for the Patreon that doesn't exist.
Yep, killing it.
Lawyers, please help us figure out how to make that exist.
Okay.
And anyone who needs guitar lessons, hit me up.
Ooh, I might hit you up, Mark.
I would love to give you a guitar lesson. I normally don't have this crazy lag, so I should be able to effectively teach over the internet.
I decided that I'm going to go get into freelance bookkeeping. So if anybody needs a bookkeeper, for your small business, fucking shoot me a message. Cause I got one client right now. It's a pottery studio. Watch the fuck out. All right, we're done.